before we get into talking about the text this morning, I just wanted to talk about this series in general. Because I know for a number of you, this is a very controversial series. Maybe you grew up in a church where the idea of sex, romance, and marriage was not something you talked about in church. Or maybe in the church you grew up, it was something you talked about occasionally or for just a brief period of time. And certainly, you would never have a pastor do 13 weeks on sex, marriage, romance, and dating. That would just be a complete overkill. That's what we just did. Well, the question needs to be asked, was this series really worth it? Was it an overkill? Well, this is what I'd like you to know. First of all, we did pay a price for it. Just so you know, there are some people who left the church during this series and who plan to return after the series. They didn't want to be here during the discussion of it. Some people left the church altogether because they felt it was not a topic to be talked about in church. And you've probably heard some of that negative press that has gone around. But I'd like to begin by giving you some positive press, the things you have probably never heard. Now, these are just some of the things that I wrote down that I'm aware of during this series. One couple that was in my office that had divorce papers filed is today together, and actually, their marriage is doing quite well, in part because of this series, they told me. Two guys have contacted the church office. They were struggling with pornography and asked for help during this series. The Lord convicted them on that. One girl broke off a relationship with a boyfriend she had for a period of time because she realized during this series that this was not the kind of man that God would want her to marry. And so she took that step of taking the leadership in that relationship and dropping it off. Some of you may not know this, but there's a number of local lesbians that began interacting with us through the internet during this series. And why would they start contacting us? As far as I can tell, it has to do with their response to seeing yard signs. Otherwise, they would have never known what was going on in the door here. Some who were living together chose to get married during this series. One couple, in response to this series in part, actually moved away from our church because they said, we need to spend more time together as a husband and wife, and the long commute is keeping us too far apart. So we lost them, but it was a positive loss because it was a sense that we have to spend more time together and invest in our relationship, and my commute is taking them away too far. In fact, I just tallied up in my list. I'm not giving you everybody, but I tallied up 14 people who have either repented of sexual sin or made major life changes that I was aware about during this series in the areas of their relationship and their sexuality. And those are just the people that I'm aware of. So I'm believing there's probably far more. Another thing we did during this series, which was unconventional, is we actually built an entire website just for this series, the SolomonOnSex.com site. And the purpose for that was to give us a venue to be able to do Q&A in an area where there are a number of questions we're just not going to ask and answer probably in the sanctuary, but people are talking about them. So, how did the SolomonOnSex.com site do? Well, because I can do this kind of stuff, I had tracking code to know how well it was hit. In the last 3 months, there were 4,500 pages downloaded from that site. There was an additional 460 pages that were sought out by people in Russia, China, France, and England. So we had a little bit of a missions emphasis in there. Sort of fun. The most popular page in the site was by far the answers to your questions section. That had a total of 1,554 times that people looked at it in the last 3 months. And the most popular questions that people looked at were the NC-17 questions. In other words, the questions that we couldn't talk about in church or didn't talk about in church were the questions that many people wanted answers to. So I think that was a positive thing for us to do, that website. And we definitely made some kind of an impact. Another thing I wanted to check out and have some tracking code in it was our videos. Because, you know, we've been videoing the services. We've been putting them up. Actually, we've been doing this for about 2.5 years. So I thought I'd tell you the results on the video. Of the series, there's 12 up there right now, videos from the series. The most popular video was the very first one, the one that's called God, Sex, and Culture. 56 people played it online. The next most popular one was the second video we did in the series called Give Me a Kiss. 29 people played it online. The third most popular was one right smack in the middle of the series. Remember the one called Sin in the Bedroom? That one? 21 people played it online. So of those three videos, the top three, there was 109 times it was played online. Okay, now how does this compare? Let's take the last 3 months and not just look at those three videos, but let's just look at all of the videos we've put up on Faith Church Online. There was 832 of those videos that had a play button hit in the last 3 months. So 832 Faith Church videos were played. Those videos were recommended in search requests 19,412 times. Well, let's just not look at the last 3 months. Let's expand it back to the last year. How many of the videos that we have online have been played in the last year? In the last year, 2,182 of them have been played. And how many times have they been recommended on search engine requests? As of Thursday, 51,100 times. They've been recommended on search engine requests. So I was sort of excited about that. I didn't realize until I went through the numbers and did the digging that there's a lot of people who are checking Faith Church out on the web. And I thought about that. I didn't know, Jim, you were going to say that, this information about the stage. But I thought about, here we are about ready to do the stage, which helps us to be able to communicate better here in the sanctuary, number one. Number two, it gives us the possibility of going multiple campus as we look into the future to reach our region and beyond. It's part of reaching our region. And number three, it gives us an even stronger internet presence, which has been something that many people have been checking out on the web. So I'm pretty excited about what's about ready to take place this afternoon. So I just wanted to share those results with you guys so you know as much as I do about how successful or unsuccessful the series was up to this point. All right, next week we are starting John on Jesus, so we have to finish the text up today. I guarantee you we will finish it up. There's a whole new series that begins next week, so let's go ahead and start here. When we last left off in the text, you remember that the Shulamite had creatively enticed her husband to get away for the weekend. A little bit of looking at him in the eye, a little bit of enticing, and they're going to get away for the weekend. And we talked about this. The message title was the marital Sabbath. And we talked about the importance of unplugging from the busyness of life so we can take time to tend to our relationship with one another. When the text picks up, they are in the family minivan. I mean, the chariot. But it's really the minivan. And let's see what's going on as they drive off for vacation. It begins right here in chapter 8, verse 5. Who is that coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? Okay, first thing we learn here is that bench seats are more biblical than bucket. It's true. When I bought my first pickup truck, I made sure it had a bench seat because that way, you know, my wife could lean right on me when we drive places. You know, it's more biblical that way because you can snuggle. And that's what she is doing here. She is excited as they're on vacation. She's snuggled up next to Solomon. They're all nice and tight. And how do you think she feels at this point? Do you think she feels good? Yeah. She's finally got him out of the office. She's finally got away from the home. She has him all to herself. He has his arm probably around her like this, and she's snuggled in real tight, and she feels so safe, and the relationship feels so fresh. what happens? And I can see some of you guys are doing that right now. You're stretching your arm. There you go. You're being biblical. What happens when you get a guy away, ladies, and you have him in the car? And this works really only when he's driving, because guys always need something to do for to make them sit still. Isn't this right, ladies? You can't get them to sit still and talk to you for 2 hours, but at least if they're driving, they're doing something. You know, and so you can talk to them for 2 hours. So they're driving. He's got the reins, and they're going. This is what we call car time conversation. You know what I'm talking about? Okay, I'm getting some head bobs. Right? Yeah. They are going to talk. They're going to connect. In fact, they're going to share on a real deep level. It's one of those times you feel like you solve all the world's problems on those road trips. This is what's happening here. Car time conversation, because Solomon can't go anywhere. She's got him to herself. Here's the first thing that we see here. A marital Sabbath is a good time to reflect on your relationship. And this is what they begin doing, reflecting on where things have gone. And Solomon starts out the reflection here. He says, "Under the apple tree I awakened you. There your mother was in labor with you. There she who bore you was in labor." So what is going on here? They're driving. They're passing they're getting close to her home. They see an apple tree. Sort of an apple tree is a unique tree. We learned this earlier. He talks about, "My beloved is like an apple tree in the midst of the forest. It stands out. It's unique. It's different." They see this apple tree, which must be some kind of important spot on the side of the road. And all of a sudden, he begins reflecting. He says, "Under the apple tree, I awakened you." Now I have to tell you a little bit of interesting stuff. If you're a liberal commentator, and this is where I'm at understanding this, there are some people who say, "Oh, look, they had premarital sex under the apple tree." And I'm like, no, we've been teaching our way through this book. The first time they were intimate was on their wedding night. It was dead smack center in the book. This does not mean premarital sex under the apple tree. What does this term aroused mean? It means to wake up from sleep. What I think this is saying is he's saying, remember when our eyes first met each other under that apple tree? He's reflecting back to the first time they made contact and there was that little spark between them. And he goes, "Whoa, she's a nice looking woman." And she said, "Oh, he is a fine man." And it all sort of began right there under the apple tree. Now, I don't know what this apple tree is like. Maybe it's a really large one. Maybe it's some kind of a gathering place. But the reflecting back on the beginning of the relationship, that's what it's talking about. Not only was that apple tree a place where the relationship began, but it was a place where she was born. Unique thing here. Maybe your mom's pregnant. They don't have ambulances. They don't have all this kind of stuff. Maybe she's out working. We know that she was not the first child. So let's just say the delivery was quick. Looks like mom went into labor under the apple tree there, and that's where she was born. And here's the nostalgic connection that Solomon makes. He says, that is where your life began, and that is where our life together began. Sort of a neat connection there. This is how it all began. Now, here's my challenge for you in the way of practical application. Mom, dad, parents, have you ever gone back to the place where you first met one another? Where your eyes connected? It's really neat when you go back to one of those places. Now, maybe for you guys, it's right here in town, but for my wife and I, it certainly isn't. It's a long way away. When you go back to those places, you begin to reflect. You had no idea what that moment was the beginning of and how your kids were going to be born out of that and all kinds of things are going to come from that. It's a really healthy thing to do, to reflect on your relationship, to go back where it all started. And it's even more special when you bring your kids with you. Because what do you think they want to do? Ask questions. They know you as mom and dad married, right? They don't know you as a single man and a single woman who first saw each other and began dating and began moving on from there. Now, Cindy and I did this a few years ago. Some of you know that we met at Willow Creek Community Church. We met in the singles ministry. And we went back to the church in the lobby area where a night in October, there's all these singles mingling. And I remember seeing across the room, I'm going, man, that is a fine looking woman. Wonder if I could meet her. And then a friend said, oh, I want to introduce you to this lady. And I got a chance to be introduced. That was nice. Initial introductions made. We sort of go our own ways and note to self. Want to get a chance to know her a little better. And I saw her later on that night, and she was sitting on some steps. And, you know, Cindy has circulation problems sometimes and keeping her fingers warm, and I didn't know this was going on, but she had her gloves off, and she had them over her feet. So remember, here she is with gloves on her feet, sitting on the stairs. I'm like, she can't go anywhere. She's captive. I'm going to go talk to her. And so that was where we had our first conversation, right on the stairs. And here we brought our kids, and we walked our kids through those first moments where our eyes met. And you could imagine what they're doing. Questions. And their eyes are lighting up. Remember sitting on those stairs? You remember what I said to you? And she remembers a lot of those moments better than I do. But it was great. It's a great time to reflect. And it's a great time to sort of re-anchor your marriage, because you start to drift after a while. And you sort of take one another for granted a little bit. And all of a sudden, you remember how it all began. So, that's the first point. A marital Sabbath is a good time to reflect on your relationship, especially when you go back to where it all began. Second point. A marital Sabbath is a good time to talk over relational rubs. Now, Solomon is in nostalgic mode. They're finally together. She feels close. They don't have that long extended time at the home. So now she starts to open up and speak from her heart. Because ladies, don't you need adequate time to connect with your husband before you want to open up and speak from your heart? Ladies? Yeah, now they're going like this. Yeah, they needed adequate time to process. Then they nodded their head. Here she is when she speaks from her heart. She says, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy is fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. Now, this is poetry, so it all flows together, but let me just try and translate in essence what she is saying here. She is feeling distance. She is feeling they're not as close as they used to be. So this is what she says to him. Number one, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. In that day, when a king would sign a document, he would take a seal and he would press it into wax. The seal was roughly the equivalent of your signature. So how important do you think your seal was? Hugely important. It was either attached on your wrist and it wouldn't come off. It was tied on in such a way, that's why you could roll it with your hand, being right here on your wrist, or it was around your neck. You showered with this puppy. You slept with your seal. You did not lose it. Think driver's license, checkbook, credit card, social security number, all rolled into one. That is what your seal is. And she says, Solomon, I want to be treated like that seal in your life. With the hecticness of life, and the times you're gone all the time, I don't feel like it anymore. Now, she comes back and she says, just so you know, this is how I feel about you. The tension in the relationship from life may have physically torn them apart, but has not torn her heart away from him. Listen to this. Very passionate here. For love is as strong as death. What does she mean by that? Death is the number one irresistible thing in life. I don't care how many vitamin pills you pop. I don't care how many times you're on the treadmill at the YMCA. What is one thing you will not be able to resist? Death. We're all gonna die. And she says, the love I have for you is irresistible. I can't shut it off. It's not like a light switch in my life. I love you fully, completely in my heart and soul, and I cannot resist that love for you. That is strong love, isn't it? Irresistible as death. Then she says this, for jealousy is fierce as the grave. In other words, no person or no thing is going to come between us and our love. I am not going to let anything tear us apart. I'm not going to let anything compete with our love. You are that precious to me. Now, it's very interesting here. She says, for jealousy is fierce as the grave. The grave, once again, is irresistible, just like death. Now, why does she say jealousy? Because as soon as we think of jealousy, we think of a negative connotation. But the term she uses in the Hebrew for jealousy is the same term that God uses to describe his love for us. Listen to this. Exodus 34:14. For you shall worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. In other words, your affections will go after nothing else because God is jealous of your love. And she is saying the exact same thing to Solomon. Nothing will tear us apart. Nothing will take that away. Next, she says this. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Now she is referring to some like Old Testament stuff. Do you guys remember this passage in the Old Testament when God displayed a little bit of a jealousy here? Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Who here has seen the movie Backdraft? This is biblical backdraft. That's what it is, isn't it? It's like, they're toasted. I told you not to use your cigarette to light the fire. You know, it's like you're not paying attention to the job. You're taking this thing not too seriously, and there's biblical discipline here. So what she says is, you know, I am very protective of you, and I am very protective of your love, and I will fight for us. I will not let us fall apart. In fact, then she says this, many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. In other words, there's going to be all kinds of things that are coming into our life that are going to try and ruin our relationship. There's going to be trials. There's going to be failures. There's going to be times that we hurt one another, times we disappoint one another. It could be a whole river of water that floods over the fire of our love, but it will not be able to quench it. That is how much I love you. Are you getting the picture of what she's saying here about how deep and how rich and how passionate her love is? It's jealous. It's irresistible to her. It's unquenchable. And now it's priceless. If a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. In other words, you may be a rich guy, but this isn't about money. This is the fact that I love you, and this is priceless. This kind of love is freely given. I've chosen to love you and give you my heart. Now, I'd like to ask the guys a question here. Who here would like to be married to a woman who loves them like this? Nobody? Okay, if you are a male and you do not have your hands up, we need to go have your testosterone level checked. Okay, This is the kind of woman that every man would like to marry because she fully and completely loves him and she will fight for him. This is the kind of relationship that everybody wants. Now, what happens here after we see this relationship is the text sort of twists. And all of a sudden, we get real practical. What would develop this kind of relationship in this woman? What helped the Shulamite to become this kind of a woman to be married to? That is the answer that the rest of the text tells us. And this is very practical. Here's the question. How can we help our children bring a love that will not die to their marriage? Now, there are two answers to this. Here's the first one. Number one, bring them up in a home that protects them from dating disasters. Let me explain to you. All of a sudden, the text flips. We have this woman. Let me say this again. We have this woman who so completely and totally loves her husband and is bonded to her husband, which is the kind of thing that we all want. Then all of a sudden, we have it say this. We have a little sister, and she has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for? In other words, when she gets married. If she is a wall, we will build on her a battlement of silver. If she is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. Now, let me explain here. Earlier when I was preaching in this series, I mentioned that the Shulamite had a younger sister because the text tells us. And when I had done my pre-research in this book, a number of commentators believe this is talking about the Shulamite's younger sister. And then as I studied the text more this week, I actually disagree with some of the commentators. I do not feel this is talking about the Shulamite's younger sister. In fact, I am very sure this is actually talking about her. This book has a number of flashback scenes. Remember that? This is a flashback to when she was a young girl. This is pre-puberty. And her brothers are talking, what can we do for her to protect her and prepare her for the day when she gets married? Number one thought here. Why is this coming from the brothers? Why isn't it coming from the father? This is a guess, but it seems like her father has passed away. Doesn't seem like he was a dysfunctional father because the family seems pretty functional, but for some reason he is out of the picture. So what happens here? Her older brothers step to the plate. And they look out for her and they care for her in a way a father should. So the brothers take responsibility for her, not just letting her go do whatever she wants with her life. And they base how they are going to treat her on what kind of character she is. If she is a wall, they say, they will build upon her a battlement of silver. Now, let me explain what this means. If she is a person who is a young woman who prizes and wants to keep her chastity and purity, they will build a battlement of silver on her. What is that? It's a decoration they put on the wall. In other words, they will compliment her. They will encourage her. They will just, bring this out even stronger in her to encourage her to protect her chastity when she is around young men, if that's the kind of woman she is, which is the woman they hope she is. Secondly, what will they do if she is not a wall, but she is a young woman who is a door? In other words, a young woman who was very open to the advances of young men. And she is naive, and she is going to get hurt and wounded and used. They will, board her up with cedar. In other words, we are going to step to the plate, and we're going to you are not dating my sister. No. I know who you are. You're not going out. They are going to protect her from dating disasters. They're going to protect her from men who want to physically use her. She doesn't have a father. What does a young woman do when she doesn't have a father? She looks for the affection of other men. She is extremely vulnerable. So her brothers step to the plate to take care of her because they don't want her to be wounded. Now, I want you to think about this. They say, we are doing this to prepare her for the day she is spoken for. We are doing this to prepare her for her marriage. But number one, they are loving her husband by protecting her from dating disasters. Number two, they are loving her. Now, if you have been following throughout this series and you've been reading the digging deeper sections on your small group questions, you will know what statistics say. Statistics are very clear that the more individuals a woman is intimate with, the less level of satisfaction she ultimately experiences in marital intimacy. Not only that, physically, but emotionally, the more times a woman has gone through connecting, tearing, the more time that's gone through with a woman, the harder it is for her to trust. And so what they're saying is we are not going to let her be used physically. We're not going to let her be used emotionally. We are going to protect her, not just because we want her to bond really closely with her husband, but we want her to be totally it's the best way we can bless her for her wedding day. Now, this is really important here. This is their way of loving her. Remember in the beginning of the book when she comes to Jerusalem and she is darkly tan because her brothers have had her working outside all day and all the other women are lightly tanned and have their nails done and more prissy. But she's not that kind of a woman. Were her brothers being mean to her? No. They were loving her. That's what they were doing. So, that was number one. Parents need to make sure they protect their daughters, especially, and by the way, this works for young men as well, need to be involved from dating disasters. Number two, as young adults, now we're talking to you, kids, this is where you want to listen. Encourage them to make wise dating choices. She, at this point, we're moving on. She is no longer a pre-puberty woman. She is a mature woman here. She says, I was a wall and my breasts were like towers. She is a mature woman, is what it's saying. But how does she conduct herself around men? Not a door, a wall. She is very beautiful, but she's not dating. Does she have a desire for a man in her life? Well, yes. And the Hebrew, by the way, in the next verse is very clear that she has a desire for a man in her life. But she's not going to be dating a man just because she has to have a man. That's literally what's going on here. She's beautiful, stunningly beautiful. She's single, and it was by choice. She kept the boys at a distance. She would not allow her heart to become so deeply enmeshed with men that she could not move forward with in a relationship. Now, understand, this is not saying that she is just a young woman who has done everything but one final act before marriage. That may be technical purity, but it's not biblical purity. Biblical purity is not just physical, but it's emotional here. She has kept other men at a distance, and she's saving herself for the right person at the right time. So when Solomon comes along, it's not like he's trying to buy a pound of hamburger at the deli counter where he has to take a number to see when he can talk to her, because she has kept herself single. And this is what we find. As soon as we go to the next verse, remember she says, I was a wall. Okay, and what do we find? Then I was in his eyes, talking about Solomon, as one who finds peace. Solomon was not just attracted to her beauty. Solomon was very attracted to her purity. That's what he loved about her. She was a person who was saving herself for the right man at the right time in every way she could. Now, if you listen to culture, young people, I'm going to tell you what it says. it tells you that you have to have lots of experience with the opposite sex so you make sure that you marry the right person. It tells you should take, culture tells you you need to take your sexuality for a test drive to see if you're compatible. The Bible tells us just the exact opposite. Save yourself for marriage. And by the way, it's in our small group digging deeper question. Statistically, this is true, not just biblically. Save yourself from marriage, because when you marry as a virgin, it is like sexual super glue in your marriage. You bond closer, you bond deeper, you bond with more satisfaction. Very important here. Now, I just want to tell you this story, and maybe some of you already know it, but okay, it's a repeat. One of the things I found so attractive about my wife when we met in that Willow Creek Community Church singles ministry, I had made a commitment a little over a year prior to meeting her that I was just like, I'm done with dating until I know I can date somebody who would possibly be a good mate. Otherwise, I was like, I tend to make bad choices. Cindy, on the other hand, she had become a Christian 3 years before we met. And she had not dated a single person in 3 years in her mid-20s. Now, was that for lack of people asking her out? No. In fact, I remember her telling me the many times she would cry herself to sleep. She said, you know, the guy was really attractive, really nice, but he doesn't love Jesus. I could never marry him. I won't even allow my heart to begin to become attached to him. We're not going to spend time together. We're not going to go out together because I'm saving myself for the right man at the right time. Because I know I can trick myself otherwise. I found that extremely attractive about her. Just like I read this with Solomon, and I was like, that was me. I understand what he means. In fact, I was the first person she dated after 3 years. And I think it was really cool. So anyway, I just want to connect with you on that. All right, now let's have some fun. It's sort of like the intensity goes down a little bit here, folks. First of all, it says this. It's a smile and some humor. Here's the humorous part. She says this. Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let out the vineyard to keepers. Each one was to bring for its fruit 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, my very own, is before me. You, O Solomon, may have 1,000, and the keepers of the fruit, 200. In other words, this is typically what it was. This is probably how they met. Solomon is the one who owns the land, who owns the vineyard, and the farmers come and they can work on the vineyard. And at the end, Solomon gets 1,000 pieces of silver for profit. The farmers get their 200 pieces of silver for profit. And here they are. They're back in the country. We're back in the vineyards, probably the ones that she owned or her parents owned, where her brothers worked. And she gets that little twist in her eye. She says, you know, I'm sort of like a vineyard, Solomon. Very fine fruit for you. Yeah, and I could give myself to whoever I wanted to, and I gave myself to you. So now you have 1,000. You own the vineyard. But you better give the keeper of the vineyard their 200. My brothers. I think you owe them 200 bucks. Because they protected and kept this vineyard for you. Now, I don't think this is a literal 200 pieces of silver, not a literal 200 bucks. I think this lady has a little twinkle in her eye, and she's doing a little goad of her husband at this point. And sort of saying, you know, you need to thank them, because I could have made a lot of choices that would have ended, I could have resulted in a completely different woman if it wasn't for them and their protection of me. Now, he turns and says this to her. O you who dwell in the gardens with companions listening for your voice, let me hear it. In other words, we're home, and you're like everybody knows you. Everybody wants to talk to you. Everybody wants to hear you. Well, I just want to hear your voice, honey. And then she says this. Make haste, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spice. In other words, honey, let's get out of here and let's go make love. That's literally what it says. And that ends the love story. I think it's a pretty neat love story. It's a pretty good love story. And as I reflected upon it this week, I kept thinking, man, what an incredible woman, what an incredible amount of love that she has for her husband. That's just miraculous. It's just so neat to me. Now, some of us are in marriages that experience a little bit of that love. Others of us are involved in marriages that are a little more stressful. Wouldn't it be great if every one of us could experience that kind of love? And then I realized we can. In fact, the kind of love that the Shulamite has for Solomon is nothing compared to the kind of love that God has for you. And that love is most clearly seen in the love story of Jesus Christ, who humbled himself to die on a cross in our place for our sins. It's the greatest love story of all. In fact, the love story between Solomon and the Shulamite is like the little mini one based upon the really big one, which is the love story between Christ and his church, between Christ and us. So really, today, while we close the love story of Solomon and his wife, the Shulamite, next week, when we begin the Gospel of John, we begin another love story, a much greater love story, the love story between for God with Jesus Christ and each one of us. And that is what we have to look forward to. Let me go ahead and pray. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this love story between Solomon and his wife. It was in some ways sort of uncomfortable because it was very practical. And it was really down to earth. First of all, I want to pray for the young women in this room. I ask that this story of how the Shulamite made wise dating choices would be an encouragement to them. I ask for parents about, as they think about the story, about how the brothers stepped to the plate and they protected her from dating disasters, and how she could say to Solomon, well, you owe the keepers of the vineyard $200 because they took care of me. I pray that that would challenge them and encourage them as they try and protect their young sons and daughters from dating disasters. Lord, we thank you for the very practical nature of this. We think about next week when we begin a much more theological and get a really exciting story of John on Jesus. And we look at the Gospels. We pray that you would just transform our church and breathe life into it. And lastly, I pray for safety and just a good time working together this week as the Church Solution Group is here to come in just a few hours and begin. We ask all this in Christ's precious name.